Hi everyone, it's me, Sandy Cruz of Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. For years now, I've been bringing to you conversations about wellness from experts from all over the world. Whether it be suggestions in how you can age better, biohacking, alternative wellness, these are conversations to help you live your best life. I want to live a long, healthy, and vibrant life. Never mind all those stigmas that as we reach midlife and beyond, we're just going to shrivel up and die with some horrible disease. Always remember, balanced living works. I really look forward to this season. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. Today with me, my special guest is Dr. Yug Varma, and we're going to talk all about the skin and how it's connected to the microbiome. We hear this all the time. Now we're going to hear from the expert. I just got back from Miami, from the Biohacking Congress. What an awesome weekend it was. And I think they're going to have something soon whereby you're going to be able to go and watch the replays if you are not able to join me there. I did moderate a panel all about biohacking mood and health with food. And we talked way more about other things other than food. It was such a fun panel. I enjoyed myself. Check out biohackingcongress.com. Now, I can't not talk about the fact that I'm actually writing a book. If you're following me, you probably already know this. I'm hoping to have my draft completed by December or sooner. And first of all, go and follow me on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. You're going to get to watch all of my full interviews. I'm on TikTok, anywhere and everywhere. You can find me on all social media platforms, Sandy K Nutrition, everywhere. And also, I have a private women's Facebook group specific for my podcast. I'm trying to be a little more active there. You can search for that on Facebook, Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen Podcast. Now back to my book, because I got to tell you about this. So most of you who follow me and who have been following me for a while, I've always said that wellness, first of all, wellness takes work. And secondly, when you actually develop all of these amazing practices to align the body, the mind, the spirit, and the soul, they become second nature. And so the book that I'm writing will serve as a quote unquote Bible for those of you who are really trying to understand your wellness. There will be a little bit of science in there, of course. However, I am such a massive believer that we have almost lost touch with ourselves and focus too much on the science that goes with alternative wellness as well as pharmaceuticals and Western medicine. When you focus too much on the science, you lose that wisdom within us. And so my book is going to incorporate how to get in touch with that wisdom within, as well as just a touch of science. And now let's cut on through to this amazing interview with Dr. Yug Varma. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. Today with me, I have Dr. Yug Varma, and he's the co-founder and CEO of Phyla, the world's most advanced probiotic acne system. He has over 10 years of microbiome research experience, including an extensive background in bioorganic chemistry, microbiology, and synthetic biology. Dr. Varma received his scientific training at several distinguished academic institutions, including Johns Hopkins University, University of California, and his scientific work has been published in many prestigious journals, including Nature. Dr. Varma's mission is to change the way we treat chronic bacterial diseases, and he's working tirelessly to achieve this goal with a microbiome-based technology platform. He is passionate about promoting scientific literacy and devotes a significant amount of time demystifying microbiome research and making the latest research accessible to the public. And today we're going to talk all about the skin microbiome as we age and how to optimize our skin health to age more gracefully. And with that, welcome, Dr. Varma. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks, Andy. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm excited to delve deep into this topic because people just think, you know, when it comes to the skin, I think people don't know enough about the microbiome of the skin and how that can affect how we age, if we have acne, if we have other issues with our skin. So, of course, I'm going to ask you first, how did you get involved in this area of medicine?
So I've been studying the microbiome for about 13 years now. And I've always been interested in kind of the underlying technology of our company, which is called Phage Technology, for even longer, for about 18 years now, which is a long time. The microbiome really is, I think, obviously I'm in it. I think it's a fascinating area of study, but I think that it's really amazing how it's captured the imagination of kind of the layperson, the consumer, the person who's kind of curious about their health and how it impacts it. And that's really wonderful because so much insight into our health and how kind of the microbiome affects it have come out over the last 10, 15 years. And I feel like the public is right there with us, with the interest, with the curiosity, and really with the demand of, hey, I've heard about this. It's really cool. It's great science. How does this impact me? You know, can I get products that improve my microbiome or balance it? Obviously, a lot more people are familiar with the gut microbiome.
Yes.
With the bacteria that live in our gut. But just like you have a gut microbiome, you have a microbiome in your mouth, on your skin, etc. And really, every surface of us, inside and out, is kind of covered with or, you know, has bacterial presence in it. So I think of the microbiome as a rainforest, an invisible rainforest that lives on our body and protects us. Just like a rainforest, it has a lot of diversity, and diversity is its strength. So the more diverse a microbiome, generally, the more healthy it is. And you know, your microbiome and my microbiome may look different, but when we're healthy, our microbiomes are in balance, right? So your microbiome is in balance, mine is too. But when we get a chronic bacterial disease, and what this looks like is acne or eczema on the skin, obviously, there are many gut conditions like IBS, IBD, Crohn's, all sorts of, gut dysbioses. What happens is one bacteria usually overgrows and causes an imbalance, right? So your bacteria, your microbiome was in balance. Now it's out of balance. To get back to health, you have to regain that sense of, a balanced microbiome. And often what we do is we treat with antibiotics because if a bacteria is overgrowing, that's the tool we have. What antibiotics do is they kill all bacteria, right? They're broad spectrum. They kill the bad stuff, but they kill the good stuff as well. And this is an experience I think many of us have. If you've been traveling and you get like a stomach bug that's really, strong, you take a harsh antibiotic and you kind of try to clear out your system, but it clears everything out and you have, the consequences of that hopefully will peter out over time. But for some people, they take an antibiotic and they have kind of a life-changing event where they're like, I was never kind of the same after that.
Mm-hmm.
And that really is because it knocks your microbiome into a kind of a permanent or semi-permanent state of imbalance, which your microbiome cannot recover from. And so studying the microbiome, we're very, attuned to kind of not disturbing a sense of balance, or if you have an imbalanced microbiome, as evidenced by if you have acne or eczema or whatever, to kind of bring it back to a balanced state instead of kind of knocking it further out of it.
Right.
And so all this to say that there aren't really any tools, or there weren't really any tools, to selectively kill just one bacteria and balance your microbiome in that very kind of elegant, sophisticated, targeted way. But we found one, and we kind of developed it based on this technology platform. And now we have a product that's available for acne based on the latest microbiome research.
Okay, I want to go back to this whole antibiotic thing, because I think that's an important thing to expand on, because so many people go on antibiotics, and there's topical antibiotics, and then there's also obviously antibiotics that we take. So how do these antibiotics affect our skin? So let's start with, you know, if we're taking a broad spectrum antibiotic orally, how does that affect our skin, or can it? And then second to that, what about topical? You know, there's stuff like Fusidin. I remember when my kids were little, you know, that would be like handed to me, like, here you go, here's your prescription of Fusidin, anytime there was any kind of a thing. So I think everybody would love to know how that affects your skin when you take these.
Yeah, I mean, antibiotics obviously are a public health miracle, right? So since they've been introduced, they've done a lot of good. But in today's day, obviously overuse of antibiotics is really bad, because there's a lot of antimicrobial resistance, which means that the bacteria are not affected by antibiotics as much. And the more we overuse them, the worse this problem gets. Now, when you take an antibiotic topically, obviously this affects your skin microbiome quite dramatically. And hopefully, you know, when you take an antibiotic topically, you're able to limit it to a certain small area in your skin. But, you know, if you're taking topical antibiotics, for example, for your acne, it's all over your skin.
Yes, I've heard of this.
And your face has a unique microbiome than, like, let's say your arms or legs. So if you're applying it all over your face, you're really dramatically affecting your skin microbiome. Now what is happening is, because the antibiotic kills all bacteria, the good and the bad, your microbiome is like a layer. It's this invisible layer that protects you. And the way in which it protects you is the bacteria sit on your skin and they consume the nutrients or occupy the space on your skin, so in such a way that other bacteria coming in cannot occupy that space or use those nutrients, right? So they kind of box out unwanted bacteria. And this is why it's really important to have a balanced microbiome, because then they kind of cover all the niches. They are kind of, you know, fully protecting you. It's full protection. When you use antibiotics, you're depleting your microbiome and you're thinning it out. And what happens is, over time, that you lose this protective ability of the microbiome. And you see this with acne, right? Because the acne bacteria keep growing back. Now, if you deplete all the good bacteria, they're not able to grow along with the acne bacteria and kind of limit it or box it out or limit its growth. So over time, your acne bacteria come back stronger and stronger and stronger. And this is why it's a nearly universal phenomenon that acne sufferers suffer relapses, right? They'll try a product, you know, it's harsh, but it's working. So you stick with it. You're seeing some results. That's great. And then after 2 or 3 months, it stops working, right? Mm-hmm. Your acne comes roaring back. You're like, shoot, I'm applying this benzoyl peroxide. I'm applying these antibiotics. It's still not working. And that's because you probably thinned out your microbiome to a point where it's no longer able to protect you. And you can't keep applying these harsh products over more than a few months, because your skin can't take it, right? So when you sort of phase it out or stop taking it or cycle in and out of it, your acne bacteria grow back really aggressively and your microbiome is not around to protect it.
Interesting. So what kinds of products do that, like, disturb the skin microbiome? Like, you know, there's a lot out there. You know, I'm thinking of a lot of different products. Like, there's salicylic acid, there's the benzoyl peroxide, there's those are more for acne, but then they use retinols as well. Mm-hmm. So because I use a retinol for wrinkles, right? Mm-hmm. For anti-aging. My needs are, you know, I want to keep my skin glowing and healthy. What about those products? Like, do they mess with my microbiome on my skin?
So, obviously antibiotics, benzoyl peroxide. So benzoyl peroxide is a kind of bleach.
Okay.
And we know this because, you know, you get some benzoyl peroxide on your clothes and it bleaches it.
Yeah. Right?
Those are very harsh acne ingredients. Even sulfur has an antibiotic effect, antimicrobial effect.
Okay.
All of these, you know, will just kill all the bacteria that they can find on your skin.
Okay.
Salicylic acid works in a different way. It's not really an antibacterial, but it opens up your pores. So it's an antikeratolytic, which means that it kind of clears the dead skin off of your skin surface. And it also opens up your pores and declogs them.
Okay.
So it doesn't really have an antibacterial effect. But benzoyl peroxide, antibiotics, sulfur, and retinoids and retinol are very interesting because they are known to have an antibacterial effect. And although they're not super precise, it has been shown that they kill the C. acnes, the acne bacteria, more than other bacteria. So that is good. But as we age, it is known that our skin microbiome gets less diverse.
Mm.
All right. The diversity kind of lowers. And I haven't really come across a good study yet that shows the long-term use of retinol or even retinoids, things like Accutane and the second generation retinoids on your skin microbiome over time and whether that decreases what's called the alpha diversity of the microbiome. Because if it does, then it could, you know, accelerate aging. Now here's the thing about retinol, right? It's like what retinol does is it accelerates cell turnover.
Yes.
And so there are stem cells sitting at the base of your skin layers, producing new skin cells. And when you use retinols, you basically accelerate that process. So the top layer of skin sheds faster and the newer layer of skin comes up. And so obviously your skin looks great, right? Because it's new skin, it's tight, it's glowing, it's free of wrinkles. But the thing is, stem cells, although they're considered immortal, meaning they keep producing new cells, they do have a sort of finite number of cell cycles in them. It's a very large number.
Okay.
But it is finite. And the thing with retinols is when you stop taking them, your skin starts looking dull pretty quickly. So you're kind of on this treadmill that you kind of can't get off of because otherwise you see the results, negative results really fast. And so I've been really curious about whether using retinol over especially a longer period of time kind of exhausts your stem cells and leads them to kind of just like at a later stage in life, just stop producing new cells at a increased rate. Because I've read a couple of articles where doctors are like, well, I'm concerned about this and people aren't studying this enough. But I would love for, you know, a research group to come out with that study. I think that would be very interesting.
Totally. That would be so interesting because this is such a huge market, retinols, for women over 40, right? And then also, like you were saying, it's often prescribed, like really, what is that called?
Tretinoin, yeah.
Yeah, for acne, right? And these are pretty harsh treatments for acne.
Yeah, I mean, things like tretinoin are really, really serious drugs. Their side effects include birth defects, the teratogenic.
Oh.
It includes liver damage, which is why you have to be on blood work every month that you take it to make sure you're not crashing your liver. It can cause joint pain, loss of bone density, and it's even been known to increase the incidence of depression and suicide. And here's the thing, right? Like acne is not just a skin problem. It's a mental health problem too, because the time when you first get acne and the cohort of people who get acne the most is teenagers.
Yeah.
And acne hits them at a time in their life when they're not sure who they are. They're trying to figure that out. They're trying to figure out who, you know, what kind of friend group, you know, they want or want to be a part of. they're so invested in kind of presenting themselves to the world and, you know, wanting to be, you know, belong to a group or wanting to be liked by their peers. And then this thing happens to their face that they can't hide, right? That massively impacts their sense of self, their sense of confidence. And there was actually a study in UK that showed that the incidence of mental health problems is almost 2/3 higher. It's about 63% higher in people who have acne versus people that don't. That's a huge increase.
Yeah.
And so to us, you know, it affects more than just your skin, and at a crucial juncture in your life. So even if you have acne into adulthood, right? And adult acne has just grown over the last several decades. So about half of women in their 20s.
Why is that, Dr. Varma?
We actually don't know. It could be a product of pollution, could be a product of stress.
Food.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we just don't know. Look, since the 50s, our lives, or, you know, since in the 20th century, our lives changed hugely, right? We use a lot of petrochemicals, you know, whether it's plastics and microplastics or all sorts of petroleum products. We use a lot more. I mean, you know, you think about skincare in 1900, skincare in 2000, and now skincare in 2023. Like, there are new ingredients and, you know, more, all of them have been very rigorously tested for safety, but no one's done like a 100-year study.
Right.
And so the bioaccumulation of a lot of these things, we just don't know what their effect is. And again, I don't want to scare people and say, you know, stop using everything, just, you know, rub dirt and beeswax on your skin. A lot of like adult acne, a lot of things like allergies and eczema and stuff that are on the rise, all have to do with the way our immune system adjusts to its surroundings over the course of our life. And the microbiome actually has a key role to play in that. So I studied this in an academic setting for many years. Now I've switched over to industry and to developing the technology that impacts acne and eczema and other diseases. But that's still something that I'm deeply interested in and I look for from time to time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to jump back to the whole thing you were talking about, stem cells and turnover on the skin. What are your thoughts on AHAs and BHAs, beta hydroxy acids, and those acids? Do they affect the microbiome of the skin? Please don't forget to subscribe and rate and review with a few kind words. This helps me to keep bringing fabulous guests to you each and every week. Thanks so much.
To my knowledge, they do not.
Okay.
Again, I couldn't probably point you to a particular study, but by their mechanism of action, they're really not antibacterial. What they do is really they kind of gently exfoliate your skin, right? So they clear the top dead layer of skin cells, and that stimulates your cell skin to produce another layer. And really how I see it is kind of on a spectrum, right? So on one side, you have relatively mild ingredients like AHAs, glycolic acid, BHAs. And on the other side, you have your retinols, chemical peels, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That are much more aggressive in taking off layers of your skin and then stimulating the underlying stem cell layer to produce new skin cells. And, you know, I think chemical peels are a great example of what happens because you can't get a chemical peel like every week, right? It's really harsh on your skin.
Yeah.
And once you get a chemical peel, you do feel like a burning sensation, right?
Totally, yeah.
But then you get this new, you know, baby soft layer of skin and it looks so amazing. And you're like, wow, that chemical peel it's amazing. A few weeks later, you're kind of back to square one, right? And you're like, oh, shoot, my skin's not that, you know, baby fresh glowing skin again. I need to go back and you're like, I can't go back, you know, every week, I have to wait for like a month or a couple of months and whatever your skin can stand. Now, when we're relatively young, we can we can take more chances with our skin. We can kind of abuse it and put harsh stuff on it. But, you know, as you get older, you know, you have to be really, really careful with your skin. However, I will say there are some really, really interesting findings recently that have shown that there are very simple steps you can take over a long period of time that if you're regular with it, it can really help your skin, right? Especially with aging.
Do tell.
So there's one study that looked at, here's the jumping off point for this study. They realized that as you get older, there's a lot of systemic inflammation in our body. And that's just at baseline, right? It's not like you have some sort of medical condition or a skin disease or anything. There's just a lot of inflammation circulating in our body. And there are two organs in our body where a lot of our immune system builds up. That is under the surface of the skin and under the surface of the gut. And again, those are the two areas where we have a ton of bacteria on the other side, right?
Yeah.
The inside of our gut is filled with bacteria and the outside of our skin is teeming with bacteria. And so the immune system is obviously there as kind of a demilitarized zone to kind of stop bacteria from reaching and coming in, because that would be a very bad thing for our body. But they're also there to kind of, they put out feelers from time to time to sense what bacteria are on our skin. And based on that, it kind of sets the thermostat of your immune system. So this study tried to figure out, can we do a simple intervention on our skin? And would that have an impact on reducing the inflammation all over our skin?
Ooh.
All over our body, really.
Right.
And the intervention that they chose was moisturizer. All right. So they formulated a moisturizer that mimicked the lipid composition on our skin that our sebum, our naturally produced oil on our face, for example, produces, right? And so they had like a balanced lipid blend that they used as a moisturizer, and they applied that to people's skin. Just applying moisturizer on your skin.
Okay.
And regular application of moisturizer after a few weeks showed a significant reduction in all sorts of inflammatory markers and circulation within the body.
Really?
Not just in your skin, all over your body.
Really?
And this is fascinating. And it's a huge observation because if you just moisturize your skin and, you know, keep it going, yes, obviously it'll have some cosmetic effect, but it also has a systemic kind of medical effect of reducing inflammation, which can have all sorts of, you know, effects. It can reduce puffiness and discoloration or uneven skin tone on your skin, but even, you know, for the rest of your body, it could have a huge impact.
That is huge. So why does it do that though? Does it do that because it creates almost like a seal? Like, I don't understand the mechanism. Why would moisturizer have such an impact?
I think it's because, especially as you get older, your skin isn't producing either the quantity of sebum that your skin needs. So, you know, our skin gets kind of crepey and dry. And
yeah.
You need to supplement with moisturizer.
Yeah.
But also the lipid composition that your skin naturally produces is probably off by a bit. And so restoring that lipid composition to the correct thing is then picked up by the immune system, which, remember, is putting out its feelers. It's probably nourishing the microbiome, and maybe what they didn't do is look at microbiome diversity, which I think would be a fascinating thing to look at, because lipids are the chief nutrient for the bacteria on our skin. Our skin bacteria are kind of uniquely suited to and uniquely adapted to using lipids and fats as their carbon source. So I'm sure it's a combination of those. But it really is, it's a dramatic result from a very simple intervention. And I'm all for repeatable practices that you can and should kind of incorporate into your daily life.
Oh, I'm with you. And listen, I people sometimes laugh at me that I'm like, oh yeah, I moisturize everything from here to my heels on my feet after I take a shower. And sometimes people will laugh at me, but I'm like, somehow that just feels good in my body. I didn't realize it has such a great positive effect. But of course, you don't want to put a bunch of garbage on your skin layer, like with a ton of toxins and, right? Like, what do you think about, you know, they're always saying, oh, phthalate free and paraben free and all that kind of stuff. What are your thoughts on that?
So I have a background in organic chemistry. And so, you know, as a microbiome scientist, when I switched over to, you know, skincare and skin science, I was able to kind of dive into formulation science as well, because kind of cool. I understood this is what this molecule looks like. This is what it's probably doing on the skin, or this is how it interacts with other stuff. My outlook is, well, things like parabens, I don't know why people are scared of parabens. I don't know why people are scared of, like mineral oil, petroleum products in general. Because, you know, they're well tested and they don't really have a safety issue. Phthalates, yes, they do, because, you know, they're hormone disruptors.
Yeah.
But in general, you know, parabens free, parabens is just a, simple antibacterial preservative. And it's necessary in all of your formulations. And, you know, parabens is not the only one. There's phenoxyethanol. There are other preservatives, but there's nothing horrible about parabens. It's just kind of a, it's something of a scare tactic, but it's also something like a marketing, sort of jingle where people could say, oh, I don't use this. Well, use something else. It has the same effect. But that's not the problem. What's more interesting to me is there was a study done, I think in Australia, which found that the average woman puts on 500 skincare ingredients on her face every day.
I saw that.
Now, I'm going to wager that your skin probably doesn't need every single one of those 500 ingredients. And so, you know, my ethos and the ethos of our company is kind of minimalism, where you're like, you probably don't need 500 ingredients. Let's say you put on 100 ingredients worth of product on your skin. Your skin's probably going to feel a bit better, right? Because it's not going to have the burden of all of those products stacked on top of it. Having said that, I think moisturizing, for example, is essential. It's really important. I mean, you see this, you know, we see this with our friends and people around us, where you're like, people who kind of moisturize their face, right? They get fewer crow's feet, they get fewer wrinkles around their eyes and their kind of mouth area. And that's just really over time. And unfortunately, it's one of those practices where you can't just like, oh, I put moisturizer, I see the effect immediately. No, you're going to do this year after year after year, day after day after day. And then maybe 10 years down the line, you'll have a beneficial effect. But a lot of us don't have the patience to kind of have that compliance for that period of time. But it is a really great practice to moisturize, for example.
Okay, so now I have to ask you about this, because we started talking about stem cells, and do you know a lot about the mitochondria of the skin? Is it separate from the mitochondria within your cells in your body? Like, how would you look at the mitochondria of the skin? And is it possible to, you know, boost mitochondrial function in the skin?
So the mitochondria are known as kind of the powerhouse of the cell, right?
Yeah.
So, our skin is made up of cells, our whole body is made up of cells, and each cell contains mitochondria, which basically process and produce ATP molecules. And ATP is kind of the energy currency of the cell. If within a cell you need to create energy, you need to put in ATP and energy is created. So from a molecular standpoint, right? Like if you're like, oh, can I put ATP on my skin? Will that do anything? Well, no, it won't, because the ATP has to be on the inside of the cell, not the outside.
What about NAD?
I mean, NAD is, so NAD is also a kind of energy currency, because it creates, it gets converted to NADP.
Yeah.
And that is the energy currency, and that gets converted back to NAD plus, which gets recycled. But adding more NAD to your skin wouldn't really help, because a deficiency of NAD is not the problem. There's enough NAD around in your cells, because if there wasn't, you'd feel the difference.
Yeah.
It's an issue of how much NAD plus is being converted to NADP. And just adding more NAD to the mix will not push that equilibrium.
Like topically.
Right. So, I mean, honestly, there aren't any, ingredients or molecules that you can kind of add to your regimen that will boost the energy specifically of the mitochondria on your skin or your face or any particular part of your body. Mm-hmm. It is regulated more in a systemic way.
Yeah.
And even like your mitochondria, for example, do not play a role in, when you think of, mitochondria provide energy to the cell. So if I feel sluggish or sleepy or tired, does that mean that my mitochondria aren't functioning well? The answer is no. The mitochondria have nothing to do with that part of your physiology.
Mm.
Because that's kind of several levels above the way mitochondria function. Mitochondria have a certain function in the cell. I'm not sure how directly you can draw a line between mitochondrial function and really kind of skin health, skin appearance, and stuff like that. From a cellular level, I think that's just, it's an interesting scientific trope that I think some marketers have picked up on.
Yeah.
I don't really see the connection, and I don't really buy into it.
Okay. Thank you. I wanted to hear your opinion on that. Now, what about topical things like micro collagen? They used to say just collagen, and now they say micronized collagen, because then that whole thing came out saying that the molecule, like a collagen molecule, cannot penetrate through the skin. You have to drink it. You have to take it internally, or have bone broth or whatever, right? So, I like to know, because a lot of people like to know, is this micronized collagen just another one of those kind of gimmicky things?
It is. So even this collagen thing, right? I find it very interesting. I have read papers where they've fed collagen and they've claimed some very small marginal benefit. But it really is in terms of like a self-reported benefit, which isn't, it wasn't like a measurable physical outcome.
Right.
Now, collagen is a protein that our skin produces, and it's a structural protein. So it kind of props up cells, it fortifies tissues. And for that reason, it is really important to have high amounts of collagen, or the right amounts of collagen on your skin, so that your skin is tight, your skin isn't sagging, and so on.
Right.
Unfortunately, eating collagen doesn't help, because the way any protein gets processed in our body is that whether you eat meat or you eat tofu or you eat, milk, or you drink milk, the proteins in that are going to get sort of broken down into individual amino acids.
Right.
Individual building blocks, get absorbed in your body, and then they're going to go to whatever different part of your body where they're rebuilt up again.
Yes.
Right? So if you ate collagen versus you ate, red meat or chicken or turkey or whatever other source of protein, it'll be unrecognizable once it's absorbed in your body. Right.
Mm.
Now, if you're applying collagen directly to your skin, I liken it to, well, I'll tell you what I liken it to, but the collagen has to be produced from within your cell and pushed out, right?
Okay.
If you put collagen on top of your skin and it's outside the cell is not going to transport it in because, as you said, they're really big.
Yeah.
And even micronized collagen, we don't have, our cells don't act like that. They don't behave that way. They're not going to pull in those pieces of collagen, build it up, knit it up into a fully, you know, full length collagen and then push it out. Mm. And so again, those are really, gimmicky. And again, like laying the collagen on top of your skin, on top of your skin cells is not going to kind of fill in the gaps, as it were. It's not like, you know, cement between bricks where you're like, oh, I'm trying to fill in that stuff. I liken it to you're trying to build a house and your solution is, you know, loading up a helicopter with bricks and just dropping it over the air on top of your land, mm-hmm. right? That's not going to build your house, but that's what you're really doing when you're applying collagen to your skin. What you need to do is get on the ground, have those bricks, and, you know, you build the house. You build it with cement and you build it with mortar and you build it brick by brick by brick. That's what our cells are doing from the inside out.
Yeah.
Apply collagen on your skin, unfortunately, it just sits there and doesn't do very much.
What about hyaluronic acid? Can that penetrate?
Hyaluronic acid is amazing. It really is. So it's a molecule that has incredible sort of water absorbing and water retaining properties. And our skin naturally produces hyaluronic acid. And again, this is a small molecule that is an organic molecule that is produced by our body. It's secreted by our body, so it's on the outside. And its function is to hold on to moisture and you know, hydrate your skin. So hyaluronic acid is an amazing product.
Oh, cool. That's good to know. I'm doing all the right things so far. What about, I have to get into candida. I have to get into that because it is such a broad term. Oh, I've got candida. Oh, I'll just buy this little box, a candida cleanse off the shelf. And we know it's not that simple, right? So candida, we have that within us. All of us have it. It's just when it becomes overgrown that it can become a problem for your skin, for your gut, for all sorts of things. Does that make sense, Dr. Varma?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. Because, like, you know, as we said in the beginning, it's all about balance, right?
Yeah.
And it goes back to this principle, the dose makes the poison. Just because you have something doesn't mean that it's bad or that it's poisonous or that you're suffering from it. It's really how much of it you have, right? And is it in balance or out of balance?
Yeah.
When people say they have candida, you have to ask, how do you know, right? And you can say, well, I feel bloated, I feel lethargic, I have all these symptoms. Well, that's not really, you don't really know. It could be a bunch of other things, right?
Yeah.
It could be a hormone imbalance. It could be a pituitary problem. It could be a thyroid, you know, it could be, how do you know that the candida is the source of it? Some people get the, you know, gut microbiome test and get the actual readout. And then I think that's a much more objective measure of whether you have candida or not. And it turns out that very, very few people have candida.
Oh, like overgrowth.
In the sense of an overgrowth of candida, right?
Interesting.
Because, you know, having a fungal infection is a very serious issue. And it can be life-threatening as well. So for people to say, I have candida, you do have to ask, how do you know? And unless they've done, you know, gone to a physician who's diagnosed it correctly, or if you've done kind of a medical test to show that, you know, there's candida in your gut, it's kind of very easy to prescribe that and give people a bunch of supplements that they may or may not need, that may or may not affect them. Because, I mean, the placebo effect is also a very powerful thing, right? The mind can do some pretty amazing things. And some people will say, hey, I had candida and this person gave me all these supplements for it. And now I swear I feel a lot better, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to ask, how do you know you had candida in the first place? And then the fact that you feel better, could it be a placebo effect? Mm-hmm. And again, hey, if you feel better, I'm not going to yuck your yum. You know, if you feel better, you feel better. No matter how it happened, if it's placebo, then more power to you. But for people to claim that they have candida, you do have to ask, like, how do you know?
Okay. So, because, you know, you hear that all the time, that a symptom of candida overgrowth is acne, right? You must have heard that, right? So yeah. What you're saying is not necessarily, but can it be? Can it be? Like, can, because, you know, they talk about too much sugar, because we can get into glycation too, and AGEs, and right, for the skin, how that affects the skin. I don't know. What are your thoughts on glycation and just too much sugar overall?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, going back a step broadly, there is a gut-skin axis where what's happening in your gut could have an effect on your skin.
Yeah.
And it's usually kind of a chronic inflammation type of issue where if there's a lot of dysbiosis in your gut, if your gut is just struggling and having a hard time, it throws up inflammation that then affects your skin. And it affects your whole body.
Yes.
That's the level of inflammation that is throwing off. However, for acne specifically, a solid gut-skin axis connection has not been discovered or well-defined. That's not to say that it doesn't exist. It's just we don't know yet. But to me, it's unlikely that a significant effect is really at play here in the gut. In other words, acne is probably not a product of what's happening in your gut. In singular cases, in individual cases, sure, it may be the case. But broadly speaking, that's not the case. However, we do know that diet does play a role in acne. But the way it plays a role in acne is that, you know, we have these glands on our skin that produce sebum. They're sebaceous glands. And the sebum, the oil that our face is produced on our face, is the primary food for the acne bacteria, C. acnes.
Okay.
Now, some of us, not all of us, have trigger foods where acne it flares up based on what food you eat. And some people are more sensitive to it than others. So what's happening is whatever your trigger food is, whether it's sugar or spicy food or chocolate or whatever, rich food, when you eat that, your sebaceous glands respond to that food by producing more sebum. Mm. And more sebum is more food for your bacteria. And so that kind of accelerates acne flare-ups. Yes, some people can control their acne effectively through diet, not all. And for some people, that is really, really pronounced. But, you know, there are all these kind of old wives' tales where they say, oh, don't eat pizza, otherwise your face will look like a pizza. I'm like, well, it may be true for a few people, but it's really not true by and large. In terms of too much sugar, too much, you know, what the glycation levels, again, those are kind of molecular and cellular level functions, which there's no correlation between those and acne. Having said that, you know, too much refined sugar, it's not good for your body in general. And over time, I'm sure, like through the gut-skin axis or just through kind of sebum production on your skin, if you eat too much sugar, for some people, yeah, you will break out because you're producing excess sebum. And really, the bacteria is seeing that overgrowing and causing an imbalance.
What about wrinkles? Too much sugar, glycation, and wrinkles? What do you think of that?
I'm not aware of a direct link there. But again, I think a few people might see an effect. Glycation and wrinkles, you know, I really don't see the link. But again, like I said, small things like moisturizing your skin have a huge effect on your overall well-being, but of course on your skin's appearance as well. And so I guess the short answer is we don't know. The jury's out on that.
Okay. So, you know, I do find this really interesting, but maybe it's also correlated with stress. Maybe it's also correlated with sleep. But, you know, people who drink a lot of alcohol, who smoke, they tend to have a duller complexion. They might look older. And, you know, I don't know. Like, what do you think of that?
Oh, absolutely. If you have a poor diet, it will show on your skin.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just on a macro level, you're not getting a right balance of nutrients to your body.
Yeah.
And it's, by the way, it won't just be your skin, right? You'll have digestion issues. Your liver probably isn't functioning great, right? Like if you drink a lot, even if you smoke a lot, your lungs are probably suffering. And so it's really systemic. Of course, your skin is kind of what you can see. And in a way, it becomes a canary in the coal mine where you're like, oh, my skin is dull.
Yeah.
And, you know, okay, start eating better, exercise more. You know, just things like getting more sleep, right, has such a massive effect on our skin. But that's really kind of a systemic. Your skin is giving you a readout of how your body feels, right? Because you're like, oh, I didn't get enough sleep. I feel really tired and crappy, and my skin looks crappy. And they're like, okay, that's a correlation.
Yeah.
If your body's not happy, your skin's not happy, and your skin's just showing you how unhappy your body is.
You want to know, I heard this once, I'd love to hear what you think of this, that, you know, because the body is so complex and there are so many functions, like, you know, we need to have saliva in our mouth in order to be able to talk properly. We need to be able to use our resources to digest our food. So it's almost like the skin is kind of like the last thing. It's like the body will say, okay, you have to digest your food. So we need to take all the resources and do that. And so if you're not eating well, if you're not moving your body, if you're not doing all the things, then your body's just, it's almost like it's trying to keep up and it can't keep up with the skin. That's why you see a lot of people who, you know, maybe drink too much and smoke too much and all of that. They look older because their body's too busy doing all the other important, necessary functions just to stay alive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's a little truth to that. I think it's probably a little more age related, right? In the sense that when you're younger, you can throw a lot at your body.
Oh, yeah.
And you can bounce back, right?
Like, yeah.
When you're in college, you can pull an all-nighter, show up for classes the next morning, or you can go out drinking all night. And then at some point, you know, in your 30s and then your 40s, and then, you know, you're just like, I can't do, like, I just,
totally.
I'm too old.
Yep.
It's exactly like that for your skin too. You know, after a while, you have to take more care of your skin. You know, if you skip a day moisturizing, or if you forget sunscreen for a prolonged period of time, you will see it. You will see the effects much faster than you could if you were a teenager or in your 20s. You know, in your 20s, if you got a sunburn, your skin would bounce back pretty fast. You know, by day three, you're pretty much back to normal. You probably have a tan. You get sunburn when you get older, hurts a lot more.
Yeah.
Takes a long time to. And again, this is because your body's repair function, your body's homeostatic systems are just a little bit more worn down, right? It takes them a little bit of time to kind of get back up to speed. And so, you know, your skin, your organs, they're all a reflection of that.
Okay, so let's get into probiotics for the skin. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so many people, they take a probiotic, they take a prebiotic, they take a postbiotic for the gut, right? Like they take all these things, but what about for the skin? Mm-hmm. Does it, because I'm seeing that a lot lately, probiotic skincare.
Yeah. So, you know, as you discussed, your skin has a microbiome just like your gut does. And, you know, it's really important to have a balanced microbiome, whether it's your skin or your gut, because an imbalanced microbiome will reflect in your skin health or your gut health. There are, and so for that reason, just like we do with our gut, we know that taking probiotics is very beneficial. And this is why, you know, we eat yogurt and we have fermented foods and we have probiotic capsules and so on.
Right.
When it comes to the skin, the flora on the skin are different than the flora in your gut, right? It's like saying a rainforest has plants and a desert has plants, right? But you wouldn't put a cactus in a rainforest and expect it to live or thrive. Just like you wouldn't take a, you know, rainforest tree and plant it in the desert and expect it to live.
Yeah.
And so the skin is a different kind of ecology than your gut. Most, pretty much all of the probiotic skincare that's out there uses gut probiotics on the skin. Lactobacillus, bifidobacteria,
yeah,
etc. It's again, it's like putting a cactus in a rainforest and then being surprised at, you know, that, oh, the cactus is not taking over the rainforest. So that kind of probiotic skincare has very limited benefits, if any. And I think the studies kind of prove that out. Then there are prebiotics, right? Again, the food that you feed to your gut microbiome is different than the food that your skin microbiome needs. And so there are well-known prebiotics for the gut, like inulin, galacto-oligosaccharides, yep, et cetera, that I see as ingredients in skincare. And, you know, they're perfectly harmless, but they're not going to do anything to your skin microbiome because your skin microbiome won't recognize that as food. And so, you know, you got to be... Look, unfortunately, you know, I'm a scientist and I try to communicate this because kind of I know the science behind this. Unfortunately, for the layperson, right, if you pick up as a consumer, you're like, oh, probiotic skincare, I want to do good by my skin. This must be good for me. Unfortunately, the probiotic skincare, the skin microbiome stuff, a lot of that is used by other brands as like just a marketing term to position yourself in a niche or to sell more product. And I think it does a lot of disservice to the consumer because, A, not only are you not selling them a product that will actually benefit them, but B, you're souring them on the concept of the skin microbiome, on actual probiotic skincare, so that if they see it just as a fad instead of just, you know, an important facet of their skin health, when the real science comes out, they're not going to be able to recognize it and they're going to, you know, discarded because they know they've been fooled once.
Mm-hmm. Now, what does, see, the other thing that I find interesting is, you know, people take probiotics, but those probiotics don't necessarily proliferate. That's why you kind of need all of it, right? You need the prebiotics, you need the postbiotics, you kind of need all of it to have that healthy, diverse microbiome. What does Phyla do differently in their skincare?
Right. So we have an organism called a bacteriophage or a phage. And that is the basis of our technology. Now, phages are, they're tiny harmless viruses that are actually everywhere. They're the most abundant life form on Earth. And they're in soil, they're in ocean, in seawater, and they're in our body. So billions of phages pass through our body every day.
Okay.
Our body, our human cells don't really interact with them, but they're nature's best killers of bacteria. So their food is bacteria. But more than that, they're very, very specific. And so one kind of phage will only kill one kind of bacteria and not any other kind of bacteria. So we've used that to discover and develop C. acnes phages that kill only C. acnes, the acne bacteria on our skin. Now you have C. acnes, I have C. acnes on my face. Every listener who's an adult to your podcast has C. acnes on their face. Obviously, all of us don't have acne. And the reason is the C. acnes is a normal part of our skin microbiome on our face. And when in balance, it actually has a protective function. But when it overgrows, that's when it causes acne because our immune system recognizes the overgrowth and causes inflammation. So that's the pimples and the zits.
Yeah.
So the solution really is to reduce the amount of C. acnes on your skin and balance your microbiome. And that's why, in fact, every major acne ingredient is antibacterial in nature. They're trying to kill the C. acnes. Only they can't just kill the C. acnes, they kill everything else as well. So our solution is to use phages to specifically kill just the C. accidens, reduce its amount, balance your microbiome, make it more diverse, make it more resilient, so that over time, your microbiome can take over and protect your skin over the long term and give you clear skin for life. So already we're seeing great effects with no side effects, right? Zero side effects. You don't get redness, dryness, irritation, or any of the more harsh side effects that we talked about. You don't get relapses, right? So you're not in that constant cycle of, oh, it worked, but then it stopped working. So, and over time, when you're building your skin microbiome, you're protecting your skin. You know, obviously we've been in the market for only a couple of years, but, you know, we're starting to embark on doing longitudinal studies to see if there are additional benefits, because C. acnes can cause low grade inflammation on your skin. So it can result in discoloration, uneven skin tone, puffiness, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so I feel like we're just scratching the surface. But a very interesting observation is, you know, as I said, phages are already on our body, right? And the phages that we use in Phyla products are actually present on our skin naturally. But more interestingly, they're only present on healthy skin. They're not present on skin that has acne.
Oh.
And so the observation of that is, you know, we all have annoying friends who never had acne, who never washed their face, look amazing, you know, never get a zit in their life.
Yeah.
Chances are they have this phage on their skin naturally balancing their microbiome, whereas the rest of us, you know, don't. And so our goal is to kind of democratize this amazing organism, to give everyone the benefit of it so that they can naturally balance their microbiome and get acne free in that way.
Okay, that's really cool. Because, you know, my husband and I joke about that. We're like I never had acne. And I see so many kids now have acne. And when I was younger, there was only that occasional kid, you know, in high school or university who had acne. So why are there more people with acne now? Like, I'm a 1970 baby, right? Mm-hmm. So I find it so interesting. Why is this?
The short answer is we don't know, but we are seeing this trend that acne has been on the rise for the last few decades, and especially adult acne, which, you know, acne used to be kind of a teenager's disease.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, you know, in adulthood are embarrassed, and they shouldn't be, but they're embarrassed. They're like, oh, I still have acne. I thought I'd have kind of outgrown that, you know? But the short answer is, unfortunately, we don't know. But we do know what's causing it, right? What's at the root of it and how to balance it. Again, because microbiome science is so young, right? The field itself is less than 20 years old. We can't actually compare our microbiome today with the microbiome of someone from 1970,
yeah,
right? Or from early 1900s and say, oh, you know, is there a trend of the microbiome getting less diverse, less rich? I suspect that might be the case. And the reason I suspect that is there are sort of hunter-gatherer communities, right? For example, the Yanomami tribe in Brazil, there are many, you know, African hunter-gatherer tribes in Southern Africa. And you look at their microbiomes, and they're incredibly diverse. I mean, their diversity compared to ours is just off the charts. And as a result, they don't have... So the Yanomami tribe in Brazil is really interesting because their modal lifespan is not different, really different from ours. But they don't have any heart disease. They don't have hypertension. They don't have acne.
Mm.
Their young kids don't get acne. Adults don't get acne. Acne is not a thing that they have. And so... worldwide, the incidence of acne is about 80%. 80% of us get it at some point in our lives.
Wow.
Yanomami tribe is zero, right? It's not 75%. It's not 70%. It's zero. They're humans just like us, right? But their microbiome diversity is off the charts. So I feel like we've lost a lot of that. Some people call it an ancestral microbiome. And I think we're on kind of a slow downward slope. which we don't realize. But as you said, you see the effects of it around you where you're like, I don't recall my peers having this much acne, but
yeah,
the next generation has more.
Okay. I do have a couple more questions. Like, so I know with Phyla, it's a 3-step system, right? Do you have to do all 3 steps?
So our hero product, our secret sauce, is in the serum. But we developed a regimen because, you know, it's really important to have a consistent regimen. It helps with compliance. And we want Phyla to be incorporated into your daily routine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we built the Phyla system, which is a cleanser, a serum, and a moisturizer. So you start with the cleanser, you cleanse your face. It's a non-foaming cleanser. So if you have a very dirty face or if you have makeup, you know, you want to take that off first. But, you know, it won't strip your skin of oils. And what it does is gently exfoliates the skin and prepares it for the next step. The serum, which is the 2nd step, has our phages, our live active phages, which will immediately get on your skin into the pore and start acting to control the C. acnes.
Okay.
And finally, we have the moisturizer, which, you know, as we talked about, is a really important step in your skincare in general, but is also specifically formulated to play well with the phages. And it's a very light hydrating moisturizer, so it won't be greasy or oily or clog your pores.
Okay, so here's a question. You're saying, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, because, you know, I'm certainly not a microbiologist. So, but the phages, so some people have, they're the ones that eat the bacteria that causes the acne. And then the people who naturally have really clear skin likely have more phages to ensure that the skin remains balanced. After somebody uses the product for a certain period of time, will those phages remain?
That's a really good question. And the answer to that is, as far as we know, for some reason, people with healthy skin, the phages stick around for a long period of time. People with acne skin, at least initially, the phages keep falling off.
Mm.
We don't know why. And again, like I said, we've been in the market for a couple of years. We ran a clinical trial, but we haven't run a longitudinal study, which we plan to do in the future. And what we really want to see is how long does it take to apply the phages regularly before the phages kind of latch on, as it were, and start growing on your skin. It's a process called engraftment. And I'm sure it will differ from person to person, right? It'll depend on your type of skin, your skin history, your acne history, how long you've had acne, all that kind of stuff. But we don't precisely know the mechanism by which the phages kind of live on your skin and don't fall off. My sense is that after a prolonged use of the phage serum, you will get engraftment. Just don't know how long. And to be sure, it differs from person to person.
Interesting. And then how long they stay is another question, right?
Exactly. How long they persist after you stop doing it, or, you know, maybe they stick on for 6 months and then they fall off again.
Yeah.
Those are great questions. Those are questions we've asked ourselves, and we're working to get the answer to them.
That's amazing. Anyway, I want to thank you. And obviously, is there anything that I missed that you want to talk about? I think we kind of covered a lot of ground here.
We did. You know, I just want to mention that if anyone's interested in, you know, looking at this new approach we've developed for treating acne without side effects or relapses, you can go to our website, phylabiotics.com. We are Phyla, P-H-Y-L-A. And at phylabiotics.com, you'll learn about our science. You'll learn about the clinical study we ran. And you'll also be able to check out our products. And really, we're trying to give people a solution and an option that they haven't had for not just years, but decades. Because now you don't have to settle for damaging your skin if you want to get rid of your acne.
That's brilliant. Brilliant. And I will have all the information in my show notes as well. Thank you so much, Dr. Varga. It's been a great pleasure.
Thank you, Sandy. I really appreciate the chat.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode. be sure to share it with someone you know might benefit. And always remember, when you rate, review, subscribe, you help to support my content and help me to keep going and bringing these conversations to you each and every week. Join me next week for a new topic, new guest, new exciting conversations to help you live your best life.